Hey everyone, Victor Perolnik here from TrustString, and in today's episode, Omid Tabye from Optimist Legal is joining us again, which I'm super excited about. This is the third part of a multi-series with Omid, all about hiring and working with remote developers. So the first two were number one. We're going to link them up here on intellectual property. Super important topic. Even if you don't think about selling now, go check it out. It's really important. We keep talking about this here forever. Second one is about setting up a company, equity distribution, preparing for an exit, things like that, linking it here as well. And the third one today is about, from a legal perspective, when outsourcing your software development or working with people directly, what do you need to know? Has that caused any headaches from a legal standpoint? So again, Omid, lawyer, managing partner at Optimist Legal, a SaaS legal firm, definitely the right person to talk to. So welcome back, Omid.
In terms of a headache, I mean, you know, we have been experiencing a global workforce for quite some time, as you mentioned, you know, since COVID. And that's actually great for startups. I know, especially at this time, a lot of startups are moving to outsourced development teams, and they have been for a long time. You know, this isn't a new practice. Outsourcing to India was a big thing, and then Ukraine. So like, it's always like moving all around the world. Nigerian developers were a big thing for a while. So, you know, they're always kind of looking for wherever that next talent pool is. Obviously, it can come with its challenges on the operational side in terms of, you know, difference in working hours, difference in culture, and these sorts of things. And there are definitely legal challenges with respect to using offshore developers. One of the biggest legal challenges with respect to offshore developers is like, okay, if things go wrong, who are you going to go after? Where are you going to go after them? And when I say go after them, what I mean is, let's say they breach your contract. Let's say they don't deliver the services that they say that they're going to deliver, right? And if you don't have a contract, are you going to go after them? Let's say you're using Indian developers. So are you going to go to the courts of India to try to pursue the damages that have been caused to get your money back, for example? Well, good luck with that. I mean, you're going to have to hire an Indian lawyer. You're going to be incredibly unfamiliar with the laws of India. There's challenges specifically around, let's say you use a development house, like what assets does the development house have that you could actually pursue and collect against to get your money back? These are some of the challenges that you're going to face with overseas development agencies or development houses. You don't know who you're contracting with. You don't know what assets they have. If they don't follow through on their contract, how are you gonna get them to pay you back or refund your money or deliver on the services? That's why it's so important to go through trusted sources like TrustShoring, for example, who have vetted, you know, these different third-party developers and so on and so forth, because they have established relationships, they're vetted, they're trusted, they have a track record that you can rely on, you have someone that you can go to if there's issues that can help you resolve those issues. That's why it's incredibly important, because at the end of the day, I always tell people, like, I think where a lot of lawyers mislead their clients is people think like legal is a magic pill. Like, it is important. No question that it's important. Contracts are important. You should absolutely have a contract. A contract isn't going to help you against someone who, for example, if they steal your money and then they go spend it all and now they have no money, what's a contract going to do for you? Like, if you want to get your money back, but the person that you want to get your money back has no money, the contract can't do anything. So legal is important. Contracts are incredibly important. They are very protective, but they're not a magic pill. It's still important to use things like common sense and practicality and these kind of like other aspects of things, and make sure that you do your due diligence so that you don't have to rely on the contract. The contract is just a fail safe. If everything else falls through, like, please, like, I hope that the contract is there and that everything that needs to be in the contract is there. The hope is that you won't have to rely on that. But to go back to, you know, the question, has it caused headaches? No. I think that the startup founders who utilize the global workforce are leveraging not only an important, but like a prudent approach to business and generate a lot of value for their company. And to not utilize the global workforce is to miss an opportunity to really leverage the available resources to drive the greatest value for your company. But to bring it back to legal, like I said, you're going to want a contract. It's going to be a services agreement. The services agreement is going to, you know, have a statement of work attached to it, for example. Or it could be like continued services. The statement of work could be for continued maintenance and operation of this software, for example. But if you're just starting out or you're bringing in software developers, you can either bring them in on a per project basis, in which case the statement of work is going to be broken out into milestones, or you're going to bring them on for, as I mentioned, you know, continued service and maintenance, in which case, you know, the statement of work should vary either way, whether you bring them on for a milestone project or continued service. The statement of work should be very clear in terms of what they're going to deliver, how they're going to deliver it, how many hours are going to be spent, what the work consists of, what the expectations are. All a contract is it's a summary, a very robust summary of the terms of understanding between two people memorialized on paper. It's all a contract is. So the service agreement, as I mentioned, will, you know, have a statement of work, hourly rate, when are the parties going to get paid? How are disputes going to be resolved? Where are they going to be resolved? As I mentioned, ownership is going to be important, making sure from that vendor, from that software development house, you get them to assign all the work product that they're creating for you to make sure that you're owning your intellectual property. You're going to want to see confidentiality. You're going to have some sort of understanding around, you know, maybe they want a license to the code base and they want to be able to use the code in other ways. You'll have that discussion with them. Other things that'll be in the contract are indemnity. So let's say someone comes and says, oh, you know, this software that you created infringes on my software. Well, you know, maybe they took that code from somewhere else and used it for your software code, and now you're being sued for it. You want to make sure that they will, you know, defend you and make you whole if you suffer damages for that. So that's called indemnity. There are a number of things that they'll indemnify you for. Intellectual property is one of them. Anything that could cause you damage as a result of their actions, they should be liable for, especially if you are sued by someone else for it. Typically, you know, there might be like a limitation of liability. So they'll only be liable to a certain extent, maybe to a certain amount, maybe to the contract amount. Maybe you'll have certain exclusions. But these are, you know, the typical things that you'll find in a software agreement. I think for founders out there, what they should definitely be aware of is make the contract local. So make the governing law the United States. Again, the challenge is going to be, it's not going to be, let's say you win. Let's say it's in the court of Delaware and you win a judgment against, you know, this software developer that you worked with. The challenge isn't winning the court case necessarily. It's going to be collecting from that software developer. And so that's one of the hurdles, the legal hurdles to working with global workforce. As I mentioned, as long as you work with reputable vendors, trusted vendors, then it shouldn't be an issue. But that's a quick kind of, well, I don't know if that was quick, but that was a breakdown of things that people should consider. So a couple things. First thing is oftentimes using, you know, third-party developers, the person's going to be like an independent contractor. Unless you hire them in-house, they're not going to be an employee. So you won't have to worry about, you know, employee benefits and that sort of thing. And obviously, like, I can't advise, you know, so hypothetically, like, I don't know which jurisdictions in any jurisdiction outside of the United States. And even within the United States, you know, there are very state-specific laws around these sorts of things. But there are global contracting companies. Like, I think one of them is called Remote, for example. They're like a third party that has offices in each of these jurisdictions, and those offices can be responsible for hiring the global workforce and making sure that the employment or the work complies with the local laws and regulations of that local jurisdiction. And so, as I mentioned, most of the time, unless you hire them in-house, they're going to be independent contractors. And so what I mean by that is you bring them in, it's like, okay, we want to, you know, build this feature. This is going to be your responsibility. And here's when we need the feature by. We need the feature in the next 60 days. And it's their responsibility to build the feature in the next 60 days. And there's like no management, or it's not like the person has to clock in at 9 a.m. and make sure that they work for 8 hours a day and clock out at 5 p.m. That would be an employee. The other thing that I want to say is, if you are hiring employees globally and you're not using one of these third-party contractors that specifically work with the global workforce to manage compliance with local employment laws, well, then you need to be doing your due diligence with respect to local employment laws. Like, whether that is working with an attorney, an employment attorney locally who can advise you with respect to the local regulations in terms of benefits and holidays and time off and so on and so forth, or that should be at the least, I was going to say, or, you know, doing your own due diligence and looking up those things online, which is not recommended because you're not an attorney. And honestly, as a startup founder, that's not where the best use of your time should be anyway. The best use of your time is driving as much value for your company as possible. And so if you're the CEO, you should not be researching local employment laws of some random jurisdiction where you're hiring people. So to scale the answer back, use one of the third-party global worker platforms to manage compliance. Or oftentimes, if you're hiring them as an independent contractor, as I mentioned, this is their project. They have to deliver on the project. The date is very clear for the date of delivery. It's agreed upon. We know with software projects, oftentimes those dates of delivery are sometimes not achieved because of various change orders and that sort of thing. That's a totally different question. But, you know, they have the responsibility to deliver software within that time frame. Their time off, their holidays are their own responsibility to manage. If you're bringing them on as employees, make sure that, you know, you're doing your due diligence, whether it's working with a lawyer or working with, you know, one of these global compliance platforms to bring on employees, overseas employees.
Boom, you now understand what it takes to hire and onboard developers remotely or hire an offshore team for your SaaS business. All the pitfalls, all the legal questions. Thanks again, Omid, for coming on. So in our next and final episode with Omid, the one that's coming up now, we will be talking about how to protect your SaaS idea from being stolen, which is actually a very common question that we're getting. I have a bit of a pragmatic answer to that, but, you know, never really been able to give that right legal answer. So Lamar, I'm very happy to be back with Omid here shortly, and he will answer that question. I'm Victor Perolnik, founder of TrustSharing, and we help SaaS companies build and run productive development teams by doing two things. Number one, we provide the missing tech and product advisory that you might need to bring clarity, productivity, structure to your software development process. That's in the form of our fractional CTOs and CPOs. And number two, we provide pre-vetted engineers, remote engineers. We're a recruiting firm. We headhunt those people, the best people out there, straight for you. They're all pre-vetted by our fractional CTOs, so really qualified. Just the best people out there that we find for you. But we also have tried and trusted lists of software houses if you ever need more of a turnkey approach. But most importantly, if you have no idea who you should be working with, talk to us, book a free call. There's no commitment to anything, but we will go through our framework and give advice on who to work with, where, what type of person, freelancer, contractor, employee, software house, whatever that might be, who's the best fit. And then we can move on accordingly to actually bring that resource to you, that person or company or whatever that might be. So feel free to book a call with us. Link is in the description. I'm looking forward to hearing from you. Go like and subscribe. We put this type of content out weekly, and go check out our other videos on the channel. Thank you so much. See you in the next episode.